guys haven't been in here, but this podium's a little rough. It's in a strange spot, so we're going to try. Okay, since we haven't met any of you gentlemen, I am going to ask you all to introduce yourselves, and you have slides, right? And the button push thing is right there, and you go
Andy,
to the right and
do
your thing. So let's start with David.
So David, you got the first two, Corey, you got the next one.
Good, go ahead and get started. Let's advance the slides there.
No, here, you push the button to the right. Even I figured that out.
There you go. All right, good. Okay. So, good afternoon, everybody. My name is David Kibbe. I'm a family physician, and I'm also the president and CEO of a nonprofit organization known as Direct Trust. My colleagues will be telling you about other aspects of Direct Trust and what it does in the history and so forth. Including the security and trust aspects of it and the cloud part of it. I just want to let you know a little bit about the background of the organization. We have approximately 130 members, all of whom are supporting the exchange of messages and attachments in what is known as Direct Exchange. Direct is a protocol that is a federal standard now, and just to be just sort of get to the chase of the bottom line, every electronic health record that's certified by the federal government to participate in the Stage 2 Meaningful Use program starting in 2014 has to be Direct ready and enabled. Direct Trust is, as I said, a nonprofit organization that has taken on the task of creating, establishing, maintaining a set of policies around security, privacy, and trust and identity that, taken together, make up a security and trust framework. We have used that framework to set up an accreditation and auditing program for what are known as health information service providers, or HISPs, certificate authorities or registration authorities, that actually provide the direct exchange services for, at this point, over 6,000 healthcare organizations and over 200,000 addressees in the country. Those numbers are doubling every 3 months. That accreditation program provides a network of known trusted organizations that can share their subscribers' information without having to go through any additional contracts or negotiations. So it really is a very classical network play in many ways. Accreditation is establishing scalable trust. Audit is the part that sort of proves the test, and we are in the process of continuing to enlarge that program as we see more and more organizations around the country want to be part of the Direct Trust Network. We also provide what we call trust network services, the most critical element of that being the offering to the organizations that are accredited a trust anchor bundle, so that we actually collect their trust anchors, we approve those trust anchors, and they are then distributed. The technical definition of trust between HISP A and HISP B is that each has the other's trust anchor in its trust store. If there is no trust anchor in the trust store, then the exchange of the messages cannot go forward. So this helps to automate and to manage the process of maintaining what is essentially a growing network of 28 HISPs right now. There are a total of 52 organizations that are in some form of accreditation. Since our time is very limited, I'll stop there and maybe elaborate a little bit during the question and answer period.
Okay, Corey?
Great. My name is Corey Mertz. I work at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology. It's a bit of a mouthful. Is everybody familiar with the Meaningful Use Program? Can I see a show of hands if you're familiar? Okay, looks like most people are. So just piggybacking on one of Dr. Kibbe's points, part of the Meaningful Use Program, one of the objectives that providers have to meet is sending electronic care summaries 10% of the time when their patients do transitions of care. And one of the required standards for electronic health records that they have to use to meet the meaningful use program is to use the direct protocol. Or electronic health records have to be certified to be able to use the direct protocol to exchange records. So, you know, that's a key part of the meaningful use program and something we're very excited about. We have given Direct Trust a grant last year, and we just renewed it this past month to work on some of the trust and policy issues around the Direct Protocol. So it's a partnership we're very excited about, and they're doing great work to really address some of the key policy challenges out in the ecosystem. I think I'll stop there and just wait for questions during the Q&A.
Scott.
So, Scott Ray, I work for DigiCert. DigiCert is a commercial certification authority, and we are ACA that's certified under the Direct Trust program. I'm also a board member of Direct Trust, a founding member of Direct Trust. As an organization, we see great value in what's trying to be built here. Dr. Kibbe mentioned that there are a number of participants in the Direct Trust infrastructure. He talked about HIS, the Health Information Service Providers. HIS may utilize CAs or RAs, and or they may provide those services themselves. The HISP has a responsibility for operating the messages that go backwards and forth and protecting that information. CAs, certification authority, typically have the role of producing the credentials that are relied upon, those anchors that get put in the trust bundle. And then an RA, a registration authority, is a responsibility of doing the identity vetting and the proofing behind the individuals who those credentials represent that are used by the HIS to facilitate the messaging. So those are the three entities that are basically accredited under the Direct Trust Accreditation Program. And if we just want to swap on the next one. Here's a workflow. I'm not going to go through that because we're short on time. But essentially, there is a role that each of these play. Hopefully, these slides might be made available after the conference so people can go through that in detail if they would like to.
Yes, they will be.
Good. So essentially, a healthcare organization can utilize a health information service provider to, in a trusted way, send and receive messaging that protects the private health information. And the most common way of implementing this is via cloud mechanism, hence that's what we're talking about today. And I think I'll leave it there and save the rest of the time for questions.
Andy.
Thank you. Andy Herron. I'm a director and strategist at Cerner Corporation. If you're not familiar with Cerner, we're a 35-year-old company that is the largest healthcare information technology company in the world. Our interest is, putting the information in the hands of the right person at the right place, in the right context, and at the right time. Interoperability is a key to achieving that vision. And specifically, I was brought on today to help kind of bring a view from the field, if you will. We are a HISP, as David mentioned earlier, so we do provide directed exchange capabilities. And I was going to talk to you today, if you're interested, in about what offering that directed exchange in the cloud actually opens up the opportunities to do, what it means to us from a business perspective, and then just give you a few examples of what's actually happening out in the wild, so to speak. So that's it.
Okay. Direct sounds as though its biggest breakthrough is its ability to move data and information across various enterprises and organizational boundaries. In an industry that's often described as being made up of lots and lots of disconnected data silos, how do you see this changing the healthcare CIO's vision of a secure enterprise perimeter attached to just a few dominant IT companies, like, for example, in the electronic healthcare records vendors? We'll start with David.
Right. So I think everybody in the room is aware that as an industry, healthcare is made up of lots and lots of silos or walled gardens. Believe it or not, electronic health record users are still devolving their electronic health records to paper, scanning those and faxing those, because there's no clear channel for the movement of data going from one vendor's product to another. Direct exchange is a very simple form of interoperability that is based on email with a layer of PKI for the security and trust portions on top of it, because after all, we're talking about protected health information going out over the internet. But it sure beats the alternative, which is fax, courier, mail, e-fax. And with every electronic health record now having to be capable of sending and receiving these messages, it does change the viewpoint of a lot of chief medical information officers and CIOs in these hospital systems who are used to having a very tight perimeter around their organization with a bunch of portcullises and drawbridges and shark-filled, you know, pools and so forth that they can control. Direct is really the first standard that comes along and says, look, you got to let data in and you got to let data out, because providers need to help their patients get their information where it needs to go. The alternative is, for example, if everybody uses the same electronic record in the United States, that's not going to happen. But all of the major electronic health records, there's over 100 of them now, are using Direct Exchange and Direct Trust members to affect what is, sort of first stage of interoperability. Very simple point-to-point exchanges of information, independent and neutral as to the content or the payload. The payload can be anything from images to PDF files to structured data.
Thank you. Corey? Earth? Yeah.
Corey.
Do
you want to comment on anything I said?
I don't think I have anything to add to that one.
Okay. Dr. Kibbe covered so if nobody it briefly. Scott?
Oh, I think Dr. Kibbe covered it pretty well.
Perfect. Okay, so now we are going to start with Corey. So how do I know...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Since you just blew me off on the last one, perfect. How do I know my cloud is secure and reliable? Not just secure, but secure and reliable.
Well, that might be... I'm not sure that's the best question for me to answer. I don't know if Scott or...
Sure, I can take that one.
Yes.
Okay. Or at least I can lead off with that one. So, you know, Dr. Kibbe talked about, we recognize that there are all these silos where there's a whole bunch of information, and you have the owners and users of that information who have a need and desire to be able to share that easily. But in order to do that, they're going to go across open, insecure networks like the internet, because that's the way most things are connected these days. So how can you actually enable that with probably the most valuable set of data we have about ourselves, which is our private health information? You want to make sure you have probably the best controls around protecting that. Weigh that against if the whatever mechanism you utilize is not easy to use, then it won't be used and you actually create a barrier and you still don't achieve the purpose of what you want to do, which is the open share of information to authorized parties, and you want to know who those authorized parties are. And so in order to accomplish that, you need to have a standard that folks are willing to adopt, and ONC have been a leader in establishing that standard, which is the Direct standard. But there also need to be controls around the way in which it's implemented, and you need to have audit and controls around the folks who are using the protocol to make sure that, you know, if the standard says you do this, that you are actually doing that and that the security controls are actually in place. And so Direct Trust was created, the certification program, the Direct Trust Agent Accreditation Program, DTAP, that certifies the three entities that I mentioned earlier, HIS and their portion of the operation, the CAs and the RAs and the portion of the operations that you do. And so if you have a competent body that is doing audit, and you have a certification program that allows participants in the community to certify to policies and criteria that they're required to keep, which if they did would demonstrate that you have secure implementation of the policies, then you can ensure security. And by utilizing something like the Direct Protocol, which is based on email, and pretty much everybody knows how to do email these days, then that makes the interface fairly easy for folks to adopt, something that they're familiar with, and then the transport mechanism that gets the data from where it is right now to where it needs to end up. If it can rely upon those certifications which the trust framework provides, then you actually have an easy interface that folks can use, and you have a secure mechanism of getting it from A to B. And so I think the critical aspect here is if you want to know whether who you need to exchange with is implemented, because let's face it, when you have two dogs in the internet, you know, or two folks or two entities at either end of a transaction, you don't necessarily know who's at the other end. And so if you want to have some assurance that they are implementing the same controls on privacy and security that are required by HIPAA that you are on your side, then if they are certified under a common standard, as are you,
then you know that you can rely upon them. And that was really why the Direct Trust Network was created. And as folks join that, anybody who's a member of that Direct Trust Network, you know that they are implementing and following those same policies of security, and you can rely upon those. And it's a far better approach rather than doing something like having to have legal contracts with each entity you want to talk to. Can you imagine if anyone you wanted to send an email to, you had to have a legal contract with them to get an assurance from them that they would treat the information that you sent to them securely? It's never going to happen, and that will never scale. But if everybody joins a network where it's a requirement of the network to sign up to that, then now you know that you can talk to anybody in the network, and you didn't spend a year putting a legal contract in place. You can be up and running in a matter of minutes.
And if I may, I was just going to camp on, and just from a technologist perspective, all we want to focus on is the technology itself. We want to be buried in the code, and that's the fun stuff, right? What Direct Trust brings to the table and is a value add for technologists like myself is it actually provides a recipe book for the policy side of it to give you ideas of the things that you need to think about as you go implement or operationalize this technology in the wild to ensure that you are creating that secure and safe network that's out there today. So it makes you think about things like what you're putting in your legal contracts, for example, where you're storing your data and how you're backing it up, not just the code itself and some of the operational and business side as well. So it's of value to us.
So do I move on to the next question?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Can you provide examples of where the investment in policy framework at the cloud level has actually driven tangible business benefits for its members?
Can I do this one? Can I take this first one and then I'll let you guys dive in?
That's yours.
I tell this story often just because it's absolutely true, and it actually is an extension of Scott's example, where if I had to go out and negotiate contracts with every single HIST provider that I want to enable my client base to be able to speak with, that I love my legal counsel, but I'd rather not spend that much time with them on a daily basis. Literally, we're averaging less than 30 minutes from the time that we're notified of new participants in our trust community to the time where we are able to communicate between those respective users of that HISP and ours. I wouldn't even be able to get through the first conversation with the lawyers in 30 minutes if I had to go negotiate contracts for that same connection. So that is just a small example of one of the value and benefits of doing this at the cloud level.
Yeah, and I also would suggest that probably half of the 27 or 8 HISPs that are in operation today are doing so through cloud implementations, right? Somewhere. We don't know for sure, but we've had a lot of our members deal with public versus private clouds. And be glad to talk with anybody afterwards about some of those discussions. But it definitely is a trend within this entire industry that's emerging to use cloud, to implement the HISP as a cloud.
So now, how do I effectively enable, the direct healthcare exchange in the cloud?
How do you, as a patient or a consumer?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one of the most exciting things about direct is the opportunity for patients and consumers to participate in direct exchange as equal partners. Most of the focus in the last year has been on enabling providers to communicate with other providers, largely because of the federal regulations with respect to transitions of care. But one of the federal regulations is that the electronic health records have to permit patients to view, download, and transmit their electronic health information to any address that they want to, and including direct addresses. So the personal health record industry is about to undergo an enormous remake. Google Health failed. Microsoft Health Vault's not doing all that well. The primary reason for that was that they could not get the health information out of the electronic health records. Direct is a way for every patient and every consumer in America to get their information in electronic format out of the electronic health records of their doctors or hospitals. So you will hear announcements over the next 6 months of places where you can go and get a new healthcare vault or some kind of account. These are often calling themselves patient engagement platforms. They don't want to be called personal health records anymore. I have a direct address as a provider, but I've already used my direct address to consult with a cardiologist. So I've already been a patient consumer using direct address.
Because it's very interesting. I know as a daughter of a constant patient that getting from the hospital in Connecticut to the hospital in New York to the other hospital in New York to this doctor, a nightmare for records that should have been able to be transported like this.
Yeah, I don't know how many folks were around early in the day when there was a presentation on about, you know, the putting the infrastructure in place for cloud to occur. But I think that's part of what Direct Trust is seeking to achieve. It's plumbing that allows the things to happen, right? So it allows all those hospitals to be connected. It allows patients to have an avenue whereby delivery of services, delivery of data that belongs to you can actually be delivered to you. And if you think about if you have... Well, in the papers recently, I read an article about a gentleman who was trying to get information from the school that his kids attended and under FERPA, and the school was going to charge him like $10,000. They'll give him the information, but it's going to cost $10,000. And what a massive barrier that is to information that he should have free access to. One of the things that Direct Trust provides is the plumbing that allows that information to flow at virtually almost no cost, other than maybe a subscription service to whatever you're using at the end of the pipe, which might be a couple of dollars on an annual basis. But
Not
$10,000, no.
So can you provide a view from the field showing examples of the successes with, as well as the challenges, of course, of a cloud-based approach to the exchange of the healthcare information?
That's Andy's.
Yeah, let me start out and others can kind of chime in. So we have a couple, we have a community in Kansas City, which is where I'm based and where Cerner is based. Truman Hospital is a 400-bed hospital in Kansas City, as well as Samuel Rogers is a federally qualified health center, along with about 26 other organizations that really have kind of come together to say, we have a community of low-income, maybe underinsured or non-insured people that are falling through the cracks, that aren't getting the care that they need because the care coordination, there's a link broken in that care coordination. And I'm using their words and not mine, and it's no disrespect between those organizations, but they said every time they faxed over a referral, for example, for additional services and care, they felt, they called it the black hole. Mostly because they knew it would eventually happen, but they had no idea of status, et cetera. And as mentioned, it was going over fax. So the fax machine could be jammed up, et cetera. So there was a lot of questions, a lot of time being spent on phone calls, paper, that sort of thing. So they basically got together. We enabled them with a cloud service. And I think there was six EHRs that this touched, because to your point, while it would be lovely if everybody used Cerner across the U.S., it's just not reality. So we enabled them with the capability that was direct enabled in the cloud to follow these referrals as they were happening, give these folks better insight and introspect into what was happening with those people, and making sure that they were getting the care that they needed in a timely manner. Operationally, just from a business standpoint, they are estimating they're saving 30 minutes per referral, which they did the math. It worked out to be about $2.77 per referral, which they do roughly 30,000 referrals in a year. The math quickly adds up to saving healthcare dollars for them from an operations standpoint, but also making sure that those people are getting the help that they need in a timely fashion. So once again, just a small example of a cloud-based service adding value and affecting and impacting real people like you and I.
So, I have a quick question. What is the difference between the patient portal, which is the minute-to-use requirement for most EHR vendors to have the portal written through the EHR and the direct, like for instance, I go to my physician, use Allscripts, next day or a couple of days later, I can log in using this username password to the portal to retrieve blood counts or something of that sort. What's the difference with direct? Is this another layer? And then second question you can answer later is, how does it work with HRE overall if it's exchange of information?
Yeah, so first of all, maybe the second question first. Direct is HIE as a verb. And there is also HIE as a noun, as an organization. So it's really the movement of the information, the health information exchange that Direct enables. You're right. Most provider organizations in this country, in meeting the specifications for stage two meaningful use, will either build their own or through their electronic health records or as an add-on have a patient portal. And I have one, and you'll be able to go to that. And one day you'll see a blue button or something that indicates transfer my healthcare record. And you'll push on that button and they'll say, where do you want this information sent? Now, I can't do that in my record yet, but it's coming because it's owned and operated by NextGen, and NextGen is committed to being certified. And so the direct part of that will be the way in which you get the information from the electronic health record that's attached to your patient portal out to someplace else. That someplace else could be another doctor's office. It could be your mother. It could be a personal health record application that you have in the cloud that's not tethered to any of those electronic health records. Similarly, and this is, I think, really exciting but very disruptive, this will be, direct will be the way that you take any information you have about yourself and send it to the doctor's office. You know, and say, here's what I'm experiencing, or here's the change in my blood pressure, or this medication seems to be giving me problems. Now, you can do that. You could do that if you sign into the patient portal. That's one way to do that, and that might be convenient much of the time. But it might be just as easy for you to take that message and send it in via direct.
So, another way of looking at this, if we take the example over here, you took a parent to three or four different facilities, and that information that was gathered at one facility, how soon does it follow that patient to the next facility? And when it gets there, is it the actual information that was collected, or did something get missing along the way? And one of the things that Direct does is it allows that to happen immediately, essentially. So
there are also a whole bunch of people starting to think about and are actually implementing Direct as a means of moving data from medical devices to and from electronic health records or to provider organizations or to other medical devices. So there's, the Internet of Things here. We're talking about identity validated encrypted messaging, basically.
If you had a heart monitor at home and that information is linked into your physician's system, how? Typically it's being sent over the Internet. And if you understand how things work on the Internet, unless that's a secure link, then there is possibility for folks to disrupt that. And I know that we've had movies that talk about potential disruption of that and killing somebody by giving an instruction to a pacemaker, which is actually a real thing that can happen, unless you actually have a secure link. And so Direct is actually that secure link that enables that information to flow, and you know that actually came from your device as opposed to somebody else's device that's spoofing or pretending to be you.
Well, I was going to say, going now straight to Corey, because I think that this leads into how does Direct fit into the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology Standards portfolio. I think this all flows right into that.
Definitely. So Direct is an important part of our standards portfolio. It's one of a number of standards we've adopted over the years. It's a key transport protocol. There's a few others that are called out in the Meaningful Use Program, and we will continue to adopt more in the future. And I think directly to the second part of your question, I think you were getting at some of the, so we've got the more traditional HIOs that have implemented a more query model over the years, and that's kind of what people traditionally think about when they think about HIE, the noun. Well, over the last number of years, we've seen a lot of those organizations that have traditionally done query-based exchange have also been adopting the direct specification and offering HIS services either themselves or through another third-party vendor. So I think we're definitely see a merging of those service offering in exchange entities as well. So,
thank you. So now, looking over this, how would you measure the success of Direct Healthcare Exchange in the cloud? What related opportunities to improve healthcare through the cloud are on the horizon?
There's so many interesting opportunities, I think, with the Direct protocol. And we've seen a lot of really interesting things that over the past few years. So we had a state HIE program where we gave out grants to all of the 50 states and the six territories in the United States to implement a health information exchange, and we've seen some really exciting use cases coming out of that work. For instance, a number of organizations are setting up alerts, so when a patient shows up at a hospital, for instance, to go to the emergency department, that they can generate an alert to send to their primary care provider to say, hey, this patient you have is at the hospital. So then they can, you know, make sure to do follow-up calls and make sure that patient comes in and gets their issues addressed. Sometimes that can help avert tests and other things that don't need to happen. So I think we're seeing things like that that are really making a difference in care, and even just getting the information from one point to another for transitions of care and referrals. It makes such a difference. I think the science and the research will be coming to show more of the, you know, outcomes in the future, but you know, I think we've seen the transactions and use of it increase a ton over the past few years, and we have all the anecdotal evidence and the stories of the successes it's making and the difference it's making for care coordination.
Yeah, and if I could sort of just give you some bundles of benefit that are likely to occur. First of all, transitions of care and care coordination is a very low-hanging fruit. In environments where the transitions of care are being mishandled, direct exchange is a very easy, low-cost way of moving information to where the patient needs to go next. So there's a lot of opportunity there. Administrative simplification and cost savings are going to be huge. You know, Medicare sends out 55 million mail documents to provider organizations every year. The savings of converting those from mail and postage to electronic messages is going to be in the millions, if not billions, of dollars over a period of time, and they're very, very interested in moving in that direction. I think that when we get to the area of patients and patient care and caregivers and their use of direct, it's almost unimaginable the benefit that could accrue from providers and patients being able to exchange information more easily, and to do so securely is I think one, you know, a bar that has to be passed. And then there's the innovation side. Then there's the side where people are thinking about, well, you know, if we can connect, you know, via a provider to another provider, why can't we connect a medical device to a server? And then, you know, and then can we use that to collect data? And then where does big data sort of fit in the analytics part? Because once this flood opens up, once this floodgate opens up, and it hasn't quite done that yet, it's an enormous amount of information going into and out of the organizations which have traditionally not wanted that information to come in or go out.
Do we have any last comments from this panel, or do we want to, are there questions from the audience for the panel?
I have one question. I work for CRO. This is all very interesting to me. What is involvement with CRO with this initiative, or what have you seen, or what would be next steps for running clinical studies?
You know, we don't have a lot of participation from CROs. We very much welcome them. I think the opportunities are huge for CROs, particularly when you think about all the money that's spent in communicating with providers by paper and fax. You know, this is a big alternative. But currently, we don't have a CRO direct trust, but maybe it'd be the first.
So along those lines, I think I spent a bit of time working with federal agencies, and you know, I can tell you one of the motivations behind someone like a CMS wanting to adopt direct as a mechanism for transport, and they currently have about $50 billion worth of missed payments, if you like, in Medicare, Medicaid that get made on an annual basis. And really the only way to address a large chunk of that is if they move to a pre-authorization model, which they can't do currently with paperwork, faxes, etc. But if you have electronic messaging, then you can actually move to a mechanism of pre-authorization for Medicare and Medicaid. And so actually CMS is actually pretty excited about utilizing this technology, because it allows them to potentially have massive savings in missed payments, where they could actually catch the missed payment before it happened rather than having to try and collect it afterwards.
In the context of this conference with the government and healthcare, is direct being experimented with the VA, given that the largest health system in the world?
Yeah, the Veterans Administration has two or three active pilots using Direct now. I can give you, they're very interested in Direct for the use of the patients who participate in their own personal health record, the Veeler Project, and because they've got a lot of veterans out there who would like to be able to move data from there, out of there, into their own private personal health records or to other private sector doctors. They also have a huge referral system. I don't know if you know this, but 60% of veterans who seek medical care every year are cared for in the private sector, not in the VA. And every single one of those visits needs to be authorized, and information needs to flow back and forth between the provider organization with respect to the clinical information that's billing, and they have to get paid. And they are they have their sights on moving much of that fax, e-fax, and mail to Direct Exchange for the referral system.
We should also point
and they're
out,
members of Direct.
Yeah, they were the first government. They were the first government agency to become a member of Direct Trust.
They need you.
Yes.
They need you.
We're here to help. Sir?
Do you see a potential confusion in as far as standards go? And I know there's a lot of companies and startups that are doing for like retail and other, for banking and things, biometric dual authentication and different ways to secure transactions and things. People will have a lot of different systems, and that you will protect will be healthcare standard and these others will coexist, because you know how technology is, it can get confusing out there with different competing technologies. Do you think that's an issue or something that you see on the horizon?
I see that as a huge opportunity for Direct Trust, but let me ask Scott to...
we actually are staying lockstep with initiatives like NSTIC, where, and even in the healthcare space, one of the things that is one of Direct Trust's objectives is, you know, being able to send direct messages is perhaps only one reason that you would want an endpoint to be authenticated or a provider to be authenticated. But then, you know, you can leverage that same authentication for other things like electronic prescription of controlled substances or electronic signing of medical documents. So there are a number of other programs which will also utilize, you get identity vetted once and you get issued a credential from a reliable source. And as long as that credential is maintained, you can rely on it for a number of mechanisms. That credentialing mechanism that we actually enable within Direct Trust, the standards that we use, we do that in collaboration with understanding what is happening in other trust communities and with the full intention of being able to rely upon processes that occur in another trust community as long as it meets the same standards that we have within Direct Trust. And so we actually have interoperability talks that are talking right now, for instance, recognition of Direct Trust with federal agencies. So everyone's probably aware that the federal PKI is a large interconnected PKI here that federal agencies utilize, and recognition of Direct Trust standards within that community, outside of that community, others that are community-based standards like the Kantara Initiative, etc. We already have working relationships with these organisations to have bi-directional acceptance of credentials from other communities, so that if you have been reliably authenticated and issued a credential that can be utilised, then we want to leverage that. We don't want to redo any work over again.
Yeah, to Scott's point, that was one of the kind of founding principles and things that we've battled with, because we're trying to get this out, get this growing in the marketplace, but at the same time, we don't want to just create a bigger silo. We want to make sure that this thing truly is breaking down those traditional boundaries so that we can make this work at scale.
Yeah, and at this point, we are a trust mark associated with a particular transport protocol. But in the future, I think you'll find Direct Trust applying our security and trust framework to other protocols and other technologies. It makes a lot of sense. You shouldn't have to reinvent all of that infrastructure that, you know, the mostly volunteer workers at Direct Trust have put together over 2 years.
Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our panelists, and